G'day everyone. So first things first, I think I've got a friend presenting next door. So just to make him feel really bad and even worse about his session, can we all just have a really, really big round of applause? Massive, Link, let's go. Good. Loud as you can.
We may call on you to do that again later. They're all when, devs in there, so.
When our boss walks in, maybe.
Yeah.
So welcome to the session on Publishing Link. We're going to try and take you over the edge here, so pardon the pun, but I'll jump right in and we'll get started. So,
okay, so a little bit about me. My name's Steve Moore. I'm a Premier Field Engineer. I'm based in Canberra, so I'm struggling with the heat up here. I went and visited my brother, and I'm sure that they put the air conditioning on up here just to get their winter clothes out. It's so bloody warm. Anyway, I'm on audio recording here, aren't I? So when I'm not spending time with my family, I pretty much just live on Link, so I don't have much of a life. In fact, I'm so bad that I even tend to Skype my wife when she's sitting next to me on the couch at home. So that's enough about me. I've been trying to learn how to surf. Not very well. I can only do it on flat water.
My name's Mark Dudock. I'm a Premier Field Engineer. Work with Steve in the same team. Couple of photos up there of some of the cool places we get to go in our jobs. So I like to consider myself a bit of a Link expert because I spent 8 hours on the weekend reading up. all right, so what are we going to do? So we're going to try and take you on a journey over the edge. Okay, so what we're going to do, as our role suggests, we're Premier Field Engineers. So from a support perspective, we're going to try and take you on a journey to understand the common misconceptions that people have around deploying Link Edge services. And we're also going to try and talk about what it's going to take for you guys to publish Link to the internet. So we're going to talk reverse proxies, hardware load balancing, DNS requirements, certs, all that sort of good stuff.
We're hoping to go down a little level, yeah, because there was a tech ed session done in the US in 2013, and it sort of covers some of the tough topics at a design level. So we want sort of you to work together with this session where we're going to try and take a little lower level and actually show you some edge configs that we want you to do. So we're hoping that you can use the two sessions together so you can get a bit of a, you know, hopefully we'll get, by the end of it, you'll understand exactly what you need to do.
And so hopefully as well, we'll try and build as we go. So we'll start with some key concepts and then move all the way through to some more deeper stuff. So can I just get a quick show of hands? Who's got a Link Edge deployment currently? And who doesn't? Okay, cool. So a bit of a mix, that's good. So a quick agenda. So we're going to cover, as I mentioned, some key concepts. So get everybody on the same page to begin with. So some of the things that Steve's going to be talking about a little later, you need to know this stuff before we get started. So keep everybody together on the same page. We'll cover some deployment steps. In the key concepts, we're going to cover load balancing,
DNS load balancing
and hardware load balancing, sort of client sign-in and that sort of good stuff. And then we'll go through the deployment steps, setting up your edge servers, talk a little bit about reverse proxies. I know a lot of people often have trouble with reverse proxies. And then finally, once you've got it deployed, what you need to do to get users enabled. So things like federation, enabling users for access over the edge, that sort of stuff. And then finally, we need to not forget about our edge servers. Because they're deployed in a workgroup type scenario, we need to make sure they're managed and all of that sort of good stuff. So we'll cover on some best practices around managing that sort of stuff in the edge. So we've got a jam-packed session. So if you want to ask a question, stick up your hand. If we think we've got time, we'll take maybe one question at a time.
Don't forget we've got 300 slides to get through.
So. That's right. So if you've got a question, put up your hand. And if we don't get to you, we're not ignoring you. So
we'll be staying after the session, so to answer. If anything's not covered, please feel free. We'll hang outside. We'll be there for as long as you like. So if there's anything else that we don't cover, definitely feel that you can grab us outside. We'll cover anything that we need to. So we just got heaps to cover, so we're going to try and get through it quick.
All right. So we've got a quick demo for you. Now, the scenario is here. I've got a colleague of mine, or essentially somebody on Skype, who is having an issue with a Link deployment, and he wants me to have a look at a few logs. So he's just basically pinged me and said, oh guys, let me switch over to the demo.
Let's get into it.
Let's get it. Yeah. So So he's going to ping me and basically say, hey, Mark, can you help me with a link problem? So you can see here my mate Jimmy Fitzgibbons is on there. I'm not sure if he's pinged me yet. So, perfect timing. So, all right. So basically, he's just pinged me. So that you can see here, he's actually on Skype. So, you know, federation with Skype, that sort of stuff, Steve will cover a little bit later. But basically what I'll do, I'll just say, sure, I think you have some logs for me. Let's share them in a conference. So what I've done, basically, I've actually already got it running up in the background, but what I would normally do is I'd go to the Meet Now button and I'd pull up a meeting. So I've already got it running, just here's one I prepared earlier type style. And what I would do, when I fired up the meeting, you wouldn't see Steve and Jimmy just sitting there. I'd just grab these three little buttons down the bottom, and I can go meeting entry info, copy off the meeting link here, and I'd flick that to him in his Skype session, right? So just to speed things up, I've already done that and he's joined.
Now the other interesting thing is that Jimmy's actually done this over a browser, so I'm going to show you how that works. So maybe what we'll do is just quickly jump over to my machine. So one of the things that I think is useful for this sort of stuff is, as you know, I'm actually joined myself with my forward-facing camera. Okay, so I can actually use that link that Mark's given me. I've got so many things in this in here. Oop, that's not what I want.
Send it again if you want.
What's that?
Yeah,
send it again. That's not a silly idea. Hit me with the link. So what I'm going to do is I was going to do it in IE, but I thought no, we'll show other browser support. So I've got Firefox on. Okay, so what we do is we grab the URL. Now, if you want to do this for just because it's cool, we'll have two videos happening at once. You can see that URL, can't you? So beautiful. I'll fire up Firefox. Trying to remember which one of my icons that is.
He's got a few.
And then if I throw SL equals 1 on the end, it says don't try and fire up the local client, because we actually have link plugins in our browsers that fire up the FAT client when we want to join a conference. So this is saying just fire it up in the browser. So this is what a customer could do to actually join one of your conferences if they didn't have a link in their organisation. Okay. So I can join this link. This is how Jimmy's done it on his end. Scooby Steve. I'll join the meeting.
I'll just flip back.
So this is all anonymous. We can actually do this with authenticated too. So if you have a need for people who don't have a link client, they're just roaming, want to get onto a kiosk and actually join this conference as well, they can do that too. Oop, I don't want to mute that. Okay. Oop.
I'll flip back over to it. Oh, it doesn't matter.
Oh yeah. So what I just want to quickly show you too, before you can do your thing now, was I just want to show I can actually add another video. So I'm going to go down here and actually choose my second video, okay, which I've got just down here. So now I've actually got video from my full client plus video from the browser.
Well, can you see that? Maybe.
Let's see, and we will make sure I share it. And then we should get you guys in the conference as well.
So everybody give a big wave to the video. Yeah.
Woo! How about it? Is that a worthy of an applause? Come on, surely it is.
Yeah. Woo!
So you can see how easily that sort of stuff would be really useful for getting your customers into sessions that you've set up. They don't have to have the link client. They can do that from a browser. That does actually require a plugin installed to get audio and video. Okay, so I actually have, if you saw my session this morning, we're talking about ice, stun and turn. That media establishment is actually being done with a plugin. Okay, that's running. So if I add a Netmon trace, you'd see this plugin actually running and doing the media for me. So doing all the ice, stun and turn stuff. On my behalf. Oh, where did he get that from?
So this is Steve working hard at Tech Ed.
Yeah.
Caught him on the beach yesterday, attempting to do a
bit. Someone was trying to harpoon me though. That's okay. Thank you very much for that, Mark.
So that's just a quick demo of sort of the things that you can accomplish with LinkEdge. So just to be completely transparent as well, the coolest thing is I'm not actually on any VPN. I've just plugged into the Tech Ed presenter network here, plugged in. My link client's just signed in, no problem. So I've got all this functionality, the same as if I was sitting in my office on Corp somewhere. So Really cool stuff.
Thanks to Jim. Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Jimmy.
He's just next door. No, he's not. He's back in Canberra. Okay, let's kill that off. Righto, let's get into it.
So, why Edge? So that was a good demo of what you might do for why you want to deploy Edge. So commonly, we talk to people and they say, you know, I want to do a link deployment. Geez, there's a lot of servers involved. Do I really need Edge? If you need any of this sort of stuff, so for remote users, I'm in presence, conferencing, audio, video, as well. So as I mentioned, I can be sitting anywhere. I can be sitting at a coffee shop, anywhere like that. If I'm running late for a meeting and I just need to get my Link client fired up, all I need is an internet connection. So I fire up my laptop, I'm connected to Link, don't have to VPN, any of that cool stuff. Federated users, so again, federated contacts just appear as if it was Steve sitting in the office next to me. So a really cool scenario as well. Anonymous users, which you just saw, so you can see the power of that, being able to conference with anonymous users using the web app. Mobile clients, so you might be thinking, oh, I don't need Edge, but if you want a mobility solution for your mobile clients, you need Edge.
Just to add to that anonymous user, so that's really just for conferencing, okay? So we don't have sort of an IM chat type function out of the box for anonymous people, so it's really just to give people access to conferences that you've set up with you know, internal people.
As we just sort of showed there.
Okay,
key concepts. All right, some key concepts. So, what we're going to cover, some key Edge components, Link DNS names that you might see that we're going to use throughout the presentation. Quick client sign-in process, a very sort of simplified version, and we'll do hardware load balancing and DNS load balancing. So what are the Edge components? So we've essentially got all those four components, the Access Edge, the Web Conferencing Edge, and the AV Edge.
Look at that.
Great AV. Animation, Steve. So they actually all sit on the same box. So each one of those services. So the Access Edge is responsible for the signaling, so this, all the SIP traffic, which is IAM and presence as well. The Web Conferencing Edge is all the PSOM stuff, whiteboard, annotations, polls. We've also got, there's a little asterisk next to PowerPoint sharing. That's still there for legacy support, I believe, so 2010 and earlier.
That's right. So basically any clients pre-2013, we'll still use that web conferencing service for rendering a PowerPoint, but in 2013 we now use Office Web App Server, so we actually want to publish that. It's just a web service, so you have Office Web App Servers on your internal network, and they will do now do PowerPoint rendering. For the beauty of that world is that we can do HTML5 rendering of PowerPoint content, so it opens up a whole new range of devices that can actually connect into a conference and get full PowerPoint functionality without having PowerPoint installed.
And then the AV Edge server, so that's audio, video, file transfer and app sharing, all over the SRTP protocol. So the final component on this is the reverse proxy. If you're going to deploy Edge, there's no avoiding it, you're going to need to deploy a reverse proxy. All the HTTP traffic that flows through Edge and internally all flows through your reverse proxy. So that's Link Discover, and we'll cover that in the signing process. The address book, Office Web App, all that sort of stuff. So if you're thinking you don't need a reverse proxy,
yes,
think again.
There's very, very few scenarios where you don't need it, so it's pretty much always. I also want to really emphasise on that audio-video service, although it sounds a bit unusual, app sharing and file transfer, desktop sharing, all that's done through the audio-video service. So you may not realise that. It's all TCP, that stuff. I certainly know when I first started learning about Link, I thought that would all go through the web conferencing service. So AV service is very important. It deals with quite a lot of stuff.
So keep that in the back of your mind when Steve's talking a little bit later about IP addressing requirements. So keep in mind that there are three services on the same physical server. All right, a couple of DNS names that we're going to cover here. So the Edge server, so each one of those interfaces has got a different DNS name. So we've got AV for audio, video. I've used some really original and creative names here for this sort of stuff. So AV, SIP, WebConf. And we'll try and refer to these in the same fashion throughout the presentation.
He was trying to slip through Mark 1, 2 and 3.
So also all the web services that flow through the reverse proxy, we've got the meet and dial-in URLs. So we refer to those as the simple URLs. So if you hear us talking about simple URLs, that's what we're talking about. So the meet is basically the meeting launcher for clients, and the dial-in is, you might have seen that list of conference numbers that you can, it's just a web page that's got the conference numbers detailed on it. Link web service for the web services on the front end, and the web Office web app servers. So I've got an asterisk there. That's essentially the only one that can't change. All the other ones, you can configure that all in Topology Builder however you like. But like I said, I've used some creative ones. All right, quick segment into client sign-in, and I'm just going to go over this really quickly. So I haven't included any of the 2010 stuff, but it is slightly different for those playing at home. Basically, the link client contacts DNS server on the internet for linkdiscover.contoso.com. So this is common for all clients, so this is why this URL can't change. The DNS server returns the record for the reverse proxy. The client then contacts the reverse proxy directly. The reverse proxy contacts the front end, so this is sort of authentication style stuff. So we don't actually sign you in the reverse proxy. We pass all that traffic into, because they're sort of workgroup servers, they're not going to be able to authenticate against the domain. So we pass that through to the front end. Front end does all the authentication, and it also passes back a few URLs, so some of those URLs we had in the last screen for all the edge services and stuff. It also returns the local access edge server that we want to communicate directly with. And then what we do is we connect directly to the local access edge. So if I was signing in the US and there was some geo DNS going on, you know, and I want to be back down. So in the example, we've got Queensland and Vic, but if it was US and Australia, I'd flow through to my local edge server there as well.
Like in 2010 days, we could actually end up talking to an edge pool that wasn't local to me. So even if I was hosted in Victoria, I could actually end up talking to a Queensland edge server if you did have multiple edge pools. So, and yeah. Good question.
The link discover A record, and I've got multiple edges across multiple sites.
Yep.
Where is it best to point that A record to?
It's a good question. So I guess that's probably a question for you, really. Where do you have a preferred location where you want traffic to go through?
You do? Just be the primary data.
You can do geo DNS solutions as well, so you can actually say, based on where I am, give me a different answer. So if I'm in the US, give me the link discover for the proxy in the US. If not, give me the Sydney-based, you know, reverse proxy. So I guess you've got options, but so that's probably going to come down to, remember, this is just web traffic to initially get me going, and then I'll talk to my home edge pool. Okay, so it's really
all
pretty lightweight stuff. So probably not a big deal, but you know, you can actually do, give them a couple of options, I guess.
So you might also notice that there are, anyone's deployed 2010, the director server's missing. So in 2013, that's not a crucial role, and that's often when we talk to customers, that can be the first one that can go. But
we're de-emphasising it, mostly around trying to minimise the number of servers that you have to deploy to get it going. And the front ends do everything that a director can do. So you know, these days, we're not recommending it. You certainly can still use directors, but we're less preferring that as an option these days.
Okay, so that's the client sign-in. So DNS load balancing. So what we're talking about here is load balancing of the edge server records. So basically we're saying each, there's an A record essentially for the same pool name, so it might be sip.contoso.com. And then you might have multiple edge servers. So you got your three edge servers, and then you might have a record for each one of those three. So there's actually some logic built into the server and to the client that helps control this. So it's not just DNS round robin. The client actually has some smarts to say, oh, I'm going to pick this one. Is it online? If not, I'm going to try the other one, and vice versa. It can go all the way through that way. So when you think about DNS load balancing, it's not round robin. There is some good logic in there. It's also not possible for HTTPS traffic. And not supported for legacy communications. So I'll cover hardware load balancing in a minute and why that might be the case, but just keep that in mind as we go through. So quick example of DNS load balancing. So I request av.contoso.com. I return the three records. I pick the first one from the list. It may not return in that order necessarily sequentially like that, but I pick the first one in the list and then I connect to that one directly. So it works the same internally as well. So you can see there for the link edge records, I've got three records pointing to the internal interface of the edge. So DNS load balancing is actually quite simple to configure. It's only a couple of records for each service. So really sort of easy to set up. Again, the hardware load balancing, we'll cover it in a little bit more detail in the coming slides. But DNS load balancing is the only way to do NATing of an edge server's external IP address. So if you want to have an external interface here and then you want to NAT to your edge servers, the only way to achieve this is through DNS load balancing.
Supported way.
The only supported way, right. So, and that's relevant for media establishment, so the ice stun turn stuff. And that presentation that Steve was talking about in the beginning is much better for that. So
I'll cover too this in more detail too, so then we'll talk about it.
I don't think there's anything else I wanted to cover
there. That's the main thing, yeah.
So hardware load balancing. So this is, again, for legacy clients. And for both scenarios, DNS load balancing and hardware load balancing, we're talking about, this is all for HA, right? So if you've got a single edge server in the DMZ, a single edge server, single web, all that sort of stuff, you don't really need to worry about this too much. But if you want to provide HA services for legacy clients and for your 2013 clients, DNS load balancing, and then for the legacy stuff,
all the way.
Hardware load balancing for edge. So the way that this works is the client connects again to av.contoso.com. The DNS obviously returns that record pointing to the VIP of the hardware load balancer. The hardware load balancer then chooses to point it through to one of the edge servers. And then Steve will talk about this in the IP addressing section, but it's really important to notice here that we actually, the client talks directly to that edge server as well. So not only do you need a VIP for the hardware load balancer for each service, you're going to need externally routable IPs on your edge server external interfaces as well. So keep that in mind when we're talking about IP addressing.
It's mostly down to media establishment, so UDP doesn't cope well with affinity through hardware load balancers, so those edges will actually talk back to the clients directly, and then communication will be client to the edge directly after that. Okay.
And back the other way. So something to note there, if you're going to use hardware load balancing on one side, our best practice is to use hardware load balancing on the other side as well. So I mentioned you need an additional virtual IP to point to the hardware load balancer per service. So if you've got one box, that's 6 IPs. If you've got 3 boxes, that's 12 IPs.
There we go. Yeah, so 3 boxes, 9 and 12. Yeah,
12, yeah.
So basically, your VIP's going to have 3. So the 3 key services, that Access Edge, Audio Video, and Web Conference, are going to have an IP address on the VIP. And then each of your edge servers have a public IP too. So hardware load balancing, you're going to have a lot of IPs being issued.
Steve will cover that more. So this is, again, key concept type stuff. Also, must not be configured for source NATing. So the client address must get all the way through to the edge, again, for media establishment purposes. And it works for all scenarios, so federation,
Legacy clients.
All sorts of stuff. Yep. So DNS versus hardware load balancing, this is often a question we get. Really depends. So what's connecting to edge? Do you have legacy clients, legacy federated partners, anything like that?
Anybody federating with OCS partners, customers? Okay, so yeah, if it's for you guys, you have to think about this, isn't it? It really comes down to whether HA is important. So if one of your edge servers dies, and if you don't, and you're using DNS load balancing, that federated partner may connect to the failed server and then won't have the logic to fail over to the other one. Okay. So that's how it's going to impact you guys.
Yep. So if there are no legacy requirements, DNS load balancing is much easier to configure. So, you know, guys that are doing hardware load balancing are used to balancing web traffic, for example, but not so good at doing this stuff for edge. So keep that in mind as well.
We love your comms guys, though.
Yeah, yeah. That's why we sort of suggest it makes your comms guys' jobs a lot easier. So again, if legacy, hardware load balancing all the way. You've got no other choice if you want HA for all those legacy clients. Hardware load balancing of web services. So I've just jumped straight to the diagram because it makes a little bit more sense. So basically what we do is we're connecting to one of those simple URLs, so meet.contoso. We get that record through DNS. I don't have that in there. We then connect to the hardware load balancer, which points to one of the reverse proxies. And then we also hardware load balance that traffic through to the link front end. So if you want hardware load balancing and HA for your web services, you're going to need a hardware load balancer. DNS load balancing doesn't cut it.
How many of you have got multiple front ends and don't hardware load balance your web services? Anybody doing that? So I go to a lot of places where they don't realise the need to hardware load balance your web traffic on your front end tools as well. Okay, so that's an important thing to understand, is that We have to throw all our web traffic, so not necessarily our media and our SIP traffic, our web traffic internally needs to be load balanced as well. So web services on our front ends need to be load balanced too. Okay.
All right, I think that's all I wanted to cover.
Beautiful, beautiful.
So we had a quick conversation, Steve and I, before we started this presentation, that every time we handed the clicker over, Steve, the receiving party has to tell a joke. So
does this feel like a bit of a, you know, an episode of Beauty and the Geek? No, all the jokes that I know have been told to me by my seven-year-old, at least all the clean ones. Am I doing the first one?
Yeah, you better.
Okay, so please forgive me in advance. What are monkeys used to make toast? Well, how do they do it? How do they make toast? I've done the joke bad already. They put it under a griller. So please forgive me. Okay, so Kataiso. So what we wanted to do is make this a bit real. So we wanted to have a sort of a typical environment and show you what it actually means to put that together for them. Okay, so we've got a what we think is a reasonably similar customer to probably what a lot of you do deal with yourselves today. So not big for what we would sort of expect in the US. So a small organisation, approximately 30% of their people are mobile workers. Okay, so they've got 2,000 people in their organisation. They want HA, their remote access solution. Okay, they want to be able to have full clients connecting over the internet. They want to have mobile clients connecting over the internet. And they also would like to have PChat available to their people. And most importantly, do some federation with a partner that they do work with, Litware. Okay? So we're going to try and take this back to that scenario as we go along, hopefully. Okay, so deployment steps. I just want to take you through what are the key things that you need to do to get your edge solution up and running. So not at a design level, what do you need to do at a lower level? Now, pay attention, because some of these questions might get asked back, and some of this good kit down here could be some of the answers, if you get the right answers. So firstly, these are the key things that we need to go through when we deploy an edge solution, okay? So design, I'm not going to talk about that today, it's not a design situation. Test, and test. So I'm a big fan on make sure you get in the lab. This stuff's tricky. You know, all of the things that we need to deal with, so hardware load balancers, you know, Campaign F5, we've got virtual machines that you can put in, Hyper-V, of course, you can test load balancing. You know, so you can do the soft PABX software that's really good that you can get in. So you should be able to build everything you need to do for production in a lab. So do that first, okay? Get it working. It's quite tricky, so it's not too hard to do, to play around in a lab. Okay, then the next step will be to deploy your front-end service. You're going to deploy your front-end service before your edge services, okay? So that's usually the place where we start. You may try and do it all in a big bang, potentially, so it may be different depending on how quickly, if the boss is saying I need it done on the weekend. Maybe doing the whole lot together, but quite often we'll do the front ends first. Then we'll configure our topology to include our edge servers. Now I'm going to cover this in more detail. We want to get our network set up, and we're going to build our edge servers. Then we'll set up our reverse proxies. Now, obviously these three here are probably going to get all done in parallel. And then last but not least, set up our policies to allow people to actually use this service that we've got put together. And then usually, if you can, go through the process of validating. So we're going to pilot it. We've got a couple of tools that we can use to make sure everything's hunky-dory before you hand it over to the boss to say, yep, go for it. It's ready to go. Okay, so designing. This is really just for you guys for After Tickhead. There's some really good doco here at this link around the scenarios for what makes sense for you. Small, medium, or large. DNS load balancing, hardware load balancing. So it shows you the ports, what it looks like as a diagram. You know, it's got really good details. So go and have a look at that. Have a look at what the scenarios that make sense for you, okay? These guys are really just for After Tickhead. Okay, so split brain. So one of the things I did want to talk about from a design point of view is having a think about split brain. So what that means is, with Link, we actually want to trick Link, the Link client, into thinking that when it's internal, okay, we only want to get answers from it from our DNS domain name that's relevant to internal records, okay? So what I mean by that is, when I'm sitting on Corp, on the corporate network, okay, when I ask for Link Discover internal, I want to get an answer back. So that's the record that I use to do sign-in. I want to get an answer back for that record. When I'm on the internet, if I ask for Link Discover internal, I don't want to get an answer back from that for that, okay? Because then the client thinks it's internal and it behaves differently based on based on those key setup messages, okay? So we need to make sure that it thinks it's internal when it's internal, and it's external when it's external. Has it got quiet in here all of a sudden? I'm not sure. Anyway, we achieve this with split DNS, okay? So you can have a copy of contoso.com, pasted on your DCs, and you only have the key records in that DNS zone. Now, there's probably a few comms guys out there going, okay, that's not something we really want to do. That's okay. I'll show you a thing we've got called pinpoint DNS zones, which can help just to do that just for the key records. Okay, I'll show you that in a tick. Right, so split brain DNS, this is just basically that in a diagram. So when I'm internal, if I ask for link discover internal, I want to get an answer. If I ask for link discover, that's my external record that I want to get an answer for when I'm external. So I'm going to get a big cross. Oh, yeah, no, that's internet, sorry. Internet client. So I want to get a big cross for link discover internal, that shouldn't have a dot. And I want to get a big tick for link discover when I'm external, okay? So the client knows I'm sitting on the internet, I'm going to behave differently. When I'm internal, if I ask for link discover and link discover internal, I want to get link discover internal back. So I don't want to get link discover. That's what split-brain DNS gives me, okay? So test. I think if most of you were at my session this morning, this is stuff that we've got. We can pretty much build our labs to look like production pretty easily. Okay, so your front ends, things to think about. One of the things I just wanted to call out from a front end, I know this is not a link front end session, but make sure that you've got your web URLs configured for your front end pool right. Okay, so it's a common thing to not understand. When we just usually go next, what are we all infrastructure guys? Next. Be careful about this section. It's very easy to skip over that and not get your external web services right, so your URLs. That's the URL we're going to throw through the reverse proxy, okay? That needs to be made available to external people, okay? They're going to use that to get their address book downloads. They'll use that for distribution group expansion, stuff like that. So it's web services that's core to your front end pool, okay? This is in the deck, so you can download this deck after the event, so don't worry about taking notes for these
all
things.
All on the Channel 9 website. So if you want to go as well, good point for past tech heads, all the content that we're talking about, just connect to the tech ed on the Channel 9 site and you'll...
Next stage is to build our edge topology. Okay, so this is where we're adding our edge servers. I'm going to show you this in real world, so don't stress. The big thing to think about is associating your edge pools with your front end pools. Okay, what that means is when I associate a front end pool with an edge pool, it means anybody hosted on that front end pool will now use that edge pool for relay of media, okay? So if I need to talk to somebody on the internet who's working from home in our organization on their link line, I'm gonna relay that media through the edge server associated with my front end pool. So if you're in a 2010 to 13 migration, if my 13 front end pool is tied to the 2010 edge pool, I'm gonna relay through the 2010 edge pool. At some point, you're gonna flip that over to the 13 pool. So just be aware of that relationship. I'll show it to you in topology building a little bit. What else? You're going to have to think about, too, if you have multiple edge pools, so the gentleman over there before, one of those edge pools is going to be used for federation. Okay, so that's for your egress point. Okay, so you're going to target one edge pool as being the for all SIP messages, we'll actually send SIP traffic through that edge pool. We won't send media through it, so we'll always send media. So if I'm talking to somebody in another organisation and we've got two edge pools, maybe I'm hosted on an edge pool or a front end that's associated with an edge pool in Sydney, I will always send my media through the Sydney edge pool, even if the Federation edge pool is in the US, okay? Just be clear about that. But the signalling will go out through the targeted edge pool, okay? So if it was in the US, my SIP signalling will go out that way, okay? Difference between signalling and media. Righto, so that's this. That's the relationship between the front end pool and my edge pool for media. Okay, so be aware of how that's done, especially if you've got multiple edge pools, just understand that. Righto, so that's the picky of the same thing. So you can see here, this person here is home on this front end pool. That's their associated edge pool for media. They will always send media through here. Not SIP, media, okay? It's an important thing to understand. Okay, NATing. So the reason why this is important, just to understand as a concept, is that when we establish media, one of the things that we do, if you were listening to my session this morning, we do istun and turn. Stun is one of the candidates or one of the IP addresses that I can be reached at. So you think about Mark stunning. It's the IP address that the edge server sees me as. Okay, so if I'm sitting on the internet, okay, one of the things we'll do is we'll try and talk to our Edge server and say, hey, Mr. Edge, what's the IP address you see me as? Okay? Because I need to learn that IP address about myself. Because when I want to make a call with Mark, I'm going to tell him what my public IP address is on my home router. Okay, so I need to learn that IP address, and we do that by talking to the Edge server. If the Edge server is getting that client traffic natted, then it's going to see it as whatever's the device that's natting me. And so it's going to go, well, I can see you as the router. That's your IP address that you should use for STUN. We don't want that to happen, okay? We want to learn what the public IP address of their home firewall is, so they can use that for media establishment later, okay? It's okay to NAT that other way, so the clients don't need to know about the Edge's internal IP addresses, but the Edge needs to learn the public IP address of the client, okay? Does that make sense? Groovy. Righto, this is getting a bit dry. So setting up your network, next thing you think about. If I'm going to go DNS load balancing, we need to do a one-to-one NAT for our audio-video IP address. So what that means is that because if you're DNS load balancing and you're putting your Edge servers in a DMZ, they don't know what their public IP address is. The comms boys are dealing with that, okay? So one of the, remember I talked about before that we relay through an Edge? The Edge server needs to know how it can be reached on the internet, okay? And it does that by knowing, by learning what its public IP address is. In a DNS load balancing scenario, it doesn't have a public IP on the box, okay? So we have to put that in Topology Builder. We have to say, for audio video, Mr. Edge 01, this is your public IP, and then we do a one-to-one NAT. So the comms guys need to give us that IP address that they're gonna provide for us, and we need to put that in Topology Builder, per Edge server, okay? So for every Edge you've got, you're gonna need to know the public IP of the audio video service. The SIP and web conferencing, we don't care. We don't need to hand that out, okay? The Edge is handing this IP address out. The other two, we don't care, it's fine, okay? I'll show you this in Topology Builder. It's a bit of a dry topic when you're just talking about it. Righto. Okay, let's get into it. So what does it mean for Contoso? So here's a couple of boxes. Let's just talk you through it. So we've chosen to use DNS load balancing. We're going to go HA, so we've got two Edge servers. An Edge server should be able to deal with about 12,000 concurrent IM sessions. So we've got a lot of... Yeah, thanks. That's great. Thanks, Mark. Not only beautiful, but handy. We've got two Edge servers. Now they're using DNS load balancing, so they're sitting behind firewalls, okay? So we'll be NATing their IP addresses. We've also got two reverse proxies. Now in your solution, your reverse proxies might be hardware load balancers, so you might take away two boxes straight away. In this case, we've just got some TMG boxes. We're gonna talk about TMG and going the way of the data, but we'll leave that for now. We've also got the reverse proxy sending traffic back through some load balancers internally to our front-end servers. The other thing to call out is our Office Web App servers for our PowerPoint rendering of mobile devices with our PowerPoint, okay? HTML5, visibility of PowerPoint files in presentations. So that's it in a nutshell. Okay, we'll bring that back in a little bit. So setting up your Edge server. So now we're at the point where we actually want to do the configuration of our Edge boxes individually, okay? There's quite a few things you need to do and make sure you get right when you're actually configuring your Edge boxes. So I'm going to show you this with a demo, so it won't be just all slideware. So let's go. Righto. So first thing, number of IPs per Edge, okay? So you've got two choices in the supported ways of configuring IP addresses for your Edge external interface, okay? And remember Mark talked about at the start, we've got three services, Access Edge, which is our SIP service, web conferencing, which is for our PowerPoint rendering for old clients, whiteboards, all that sort of stuff, polls, things like that. And then we've got SRTP, which is basically it's media, secure real-time protocol. But anyway, that's an acronym. So that's our audio video side. So you can see in the first way of deploying our IP addresses, we can actually allocate our Edge server with one public IP address, okay? But if we do actually give that external interface one IP, if we've got three services running on that external interface, we need to have those services running on different ports, okay? So we can't have those three services running on the same port. We need to have them on separate ports. So from a public IP addressing point of view, we've only used one, that's nice, okay? But we've got our three services listing on different ports. So one of the problems with this solution is that if, you know, what we really want to do is let people work from anywhere. And so a lot of people will connect in. Now, for me, I spent a lot of time at coffee shops. I got too much blood in my coffee system. You know, if the cafe firewall allows 443 out, which is probably going to be okay, right, and 80, these other two, they're probably going to get blocked. So I now have got a connectivity problem. So we're setting this up for remote access, but I might have clients that, depending on where they are, they don't get through. So that's going to be your problem, right? So what we want to do is potentially look at the other option. So one of the drawbacks with this IP addressing of our external interface for the edges, if we go to the three IPs, so we can have three public IPs assigned to our edge servers, and we can have our services then listening on the same port. So the beauty of that is we've now got all those three services listening on 443. We've solved our connectivity problems, okay? So it doesn't matter where I'm connecting in, 443 is pretty standard, we should be able to get through. The only problem is we've now exhausted, we've used more public IPs. So you've got a thing to think about how you want to do this and what's important to you, okay? So, yeah, okay. I talked ahead. So next thing, server hardware. This is for after. It's more just for your reference, okay? Righto, DNS requirements. Just a couple of little things. Mark's touched on it already, but I just wanted to call out some of the things about things you're going to need to set up. So if you're going to do federation, you're going to need one of these service records, okay? Potentially. You can actually do direct federation, so you can actually give your partner your edge servers, SIP, Access Edge, FQDN. If you don't want to do that, you want to let them do it automatically, we need to have one of these service records created for our domain, okay? If you're going to do XMPP federation, probably most of us aren't, you also have a service record for XMPP, okay? And then obviously, most importantly, we'll need these, our key services published on the web as well, okay? Oh, and don't forget Link Discover. So all of our 2013 clients, so our mobile clients most importantly, only understand this method of finding our edge pool, okay? So if you're going to go 2013 mobile clients, you need to have a Link Discover record. If you have 2013 full clients only, they will fall back to the SIP TLS service record methods. So using one of these guys up here. Okay, so if that's what you got set up today, the 2013 clients and older will cope with this. But if you're going to go mobility, so 2013 mobile clients, they only understand this for finding our Access Edge service. Okay.
So just on that one, Steve, yeah. Who's got managing more than one SIP domain? A few people. Not sure if you want to cover the last point about.
Oh yeah. Okay. So what you can do, if you do have a lot of SIP domains in your organisation, and I see it pretty regularly where maybe on our DLs anyway, where a customer might have 100 SIP domains. You know, so maybe you work for an organisation that buys other companies, and so you've got all these names that are part of your environment. It's a bit hard to get all of those names on your certs. Okay, so all this stuff's going to be on certs, our SIP domains. So you can actually get around that, or you know, have workarounds for this problem by actually having our SIP TLS record created on the web. And this record here is actually going to point to our Access Edge service. So the it might be sip.contosa.com, let's say. So what I mean by that is we could actually have a service record for fabricam.com, SIP TLS service record, pointing at sip.contosa.com. Okay, so the domain name now is different to the automatic discovery record. So I could also have linkdiscover.fabricam.com point at a reverse proxy, and then it will get me back to my sip.contosa.com edge pool. Now, one of the gotchas with this, with that model, is that if you use sip.contosa.com, your clients are going to say, hang on, I signed in with Steve at fabricam.com. Am I being DNS poisoned? Am I being sent to an edge pool that I don't trust? And you get a little prompt saying, do you trust this sip.contosa.com? And we love prompts for our users, don't we? You know, so you know, they're going to go, oh dear, that sounds terrible. I don't want to do that.
Well, they'll just click yes.
Yeah, so there is a way of working around that. You can actually, there's a registry key called Trust Model Data that can actually say, trust sip.contosa.com. Okay, so it's a current user registry key, so that's a bit tricky to deploy. But if it's just for your corporate users, you should be able to deploy that as part of your service.
How does that apply for mobile clients?
Yeah, it's not easy. That's right. Not a good solution. I don't actually know whether we do the same thing on our 13 clients. Good question. You better get a... I'll follow up for you on that one. No worries. Actually, you want to get one of these things?
Sure.
That's a great question. I don't know whether we can do trust and model data. I suspect we can because we have the same issue with Office 365. Okay, so we have common URLs for link in the cloud. So it should be doable, but I'll follow up for you. Nice one. Okay. Cert requirements. So your edges have an internal cert and an external cert. Okay, so your external cert, yes. Our external cert's going to be issued by a public CA. Our internal cert, you can use an internal CA. Okay, so you don't have to have a public cert for that. The key thing I really want to stress is that your external cert, if you've got multiple edges, needs to be have a private key exportable and be used on all of the edge servers. It needs to be the same certificate on each edge server. Okay, it's really important for when we do our MRAS token. So when we're doing authentication to our edge, I need to be able to get a token from one edge and potentially go to another edge later. Okay, and then if that's been signed with the same cert, we're good to go. Okay, so important concept. So here's our internal cert. On the internal cert, it's only going to have the pool FQDN. Okay, so the SANs on that's pretty simple. On our external cert, we'll have the subject name of our access edge service, and then we'll have subject alternate names for both our access edge and our web conferencing, no AV. So don't worry if the audio video service URL is not in there. It's not needed. Okay. This is what you're going to get when you go to assign a cert to your Edge public interface. It's going to tell you very clearly, make sure you're using the same cert across all your Edge servers. Okay? Righto.
If you've got a customer who's got 50 or 60 SIP domains, obviously you're not going to fit all of them on one certificate. What would you typically do there? Would you deploy multiple Edge pools and sort of start to break it out that way?
This is where you're going to come around that trust model data option, probably. It depends on how many. So you should be able to get, I think 60 is probably enough. Probably could get in, but you're going to pay obviously for more FQDNs you have on a cert, the more you pay for it. But what you can do is actually point your service records at a common access edge domain. Okay, so you're going to have to deal with the prompt, so sort that one out. But at least then you can have a sip.contessa.com for all your SIP domains. If that makes sense. Okay, cool. Righto. So I think in the interest of time, I'm not going to go too crazy on this. This is really well documented, okay? So that's one of the great things about the comms for Edge is that there actually is pretty good doco. So that design page I had before has all of this in detail, okay? So the ins and outs, which way things are going, it's really important, really well documented. So there's a lot of traffic there, but I'll fly through this.
Yeah, TechNet is your friend for this sort of stuff.
just some new things in 2013. We actually do the CLS, so the common... central logging service, so be able to actually turn on logging for all my edge servers in my edge pool. We use these new ports here, and we've got XMPP 23456. This is on the internal interface. We've also got XMPP on TCP 5269 on our access edge service. Everything else is standard, was there in 2010. Righto. Okay, setting up your reverse proxies. Oh, hang on. Where's my demo slide? Is it gone?
Well, we might as well do it here now.
Yeah, okay. We lost it. Okay, let's do this really quickly. Okay, let's go. So I've got, I just wanted to show you a typical Edge server and go through some of the key important things. So let's fire up our DNS. Oh, got my demo notes. What I'm going to do, I've got a memory like a sieve, so I need good old notes. Okay, so first of all, let's just show you some of the split terrain stuff. So here's some NS lookup commands I'm going to throw in here. Excuse me. Oh, DNS timed out. There we go. It's just, it is actually giving me answers. So you can see here, Link Discover is coming back with an answer for me. I'm actually targeting my external, so think of 172.240.253. I'm going to show you these in a second. In a bit better detail, let's scroll back up again. So I am getting an answer externally for Link Discover. I'm not getting an answer for Link Discover internal, as you can see there. Now for AV, because we're using DNS load balancing, I'm getting two IP addresses back, one for each of my edges, okay? So 186 and 183 are the IP addresses of my audio video service for my two edges, okay? So the client's going to know about these. We've got SIP, which is Access Edge. Again, because we're using DNS load balancing, we're getting two answers back. I've got my SIP Federation TLS record, and you can see here that the Federation TLS record is pointing at my edge pool, okay? This is how you do the, I might have fabricam.com pointing at SIP.com and Taso.com in the multiple SIP domain scenario. But in this case, it's just purely the SIP Federation TLS contoso.com at SIP contoso.com. Now, I don't need to have SIP TLS if I'm going to use 2013 clients. If you're not using 2013 clients, you'll need this service record for, so if you're not using 2013 clients, like 2010 clients, they will use SIP TLS service record to find their edge pool. So you'll still need that, okay? In my case, I don't need it. I just need Link Discover. Reverse proxy is going to get me to the edge, okay? Righto, so if I have a quick look at what the answers are if I hit a DC on the inside, okay? Let's throw that in here. I'm going to get different answers. So Link Discover shouldn't come back with an answer. Let's have a quick look and see. I'll scroll through these when it comes back. Okay, so here we go. Let it finish, then I'll show you. So I'm targeting the internal DC, so my clients on the internal side are going to have different answers. Let's go to the top. So SIP Federation TLS is not needed on the inside, obviously. SIP TLS, in this case, what have we got? Not found as well, it's not needed on the inside. Now you can see here that I did want to include for you that the edge pool, so in Topology Builder, does need to be found by front ends and by clients. Okay, so I do need to have my internal name for my edge pool registered on the internal DNS. Okay, so clients will talk to the edge directly. They need to know how to find them. The front ends very importantly need to be able to find my edge pool. So you'll define your edge pool with two DNS records, because I'm using DNS load balancing, these guys here, and the clients will also need to know that. Importantly too, a very easy step to forget is you need to put your edge servers into DNS as well. Okay, so because they're in a work group, they won't automatically add their records to DNS. You need to go and do that manually, okay? DNS, AD is gonna say, no, no, don't know who you are, you're not authenticated. I'm not gonna let you put records in my DNS zone, okay? So you need to do that too. Beautiful, okay. Now I just want to show you really quickly, pinpoint DNS zones. So let's fire up a DC. We'll go on to DC. So just to make this a bit more real, this gives you a way of, if your comms guys don't want to enable the creation of contoso.com internally, okay, that's okay. What we can do is do a sort of a subset of that. So let's paste these. I'll just fire them up first. Oop. Throw them in here. So what I'm doing here is I'm going to create a zone called linkdiscoverinternal.fabricam.com. Okay, this will give me, and I'm going to create an A record associated with that, so I can now have Link Discover Internal internally. I may not have everything else, so fabricam.com might be sitting out of my external DNS, so if my comms guys own that, they're not going to let me create this internally. They don't want to do that, that's fine. I can now find Link Discover Internal. I've now got my front-end web services. I can find where I need to go. Okay, so let's do it so you can see what it looks like. So I'll throw that in.
The only way to do it as well is from the command line. So you can't do this in the DNS console, in the MMC.
So what I'll get now, so we're going up here into AD, you'll see I've got this just zone here.
Zoom in if you
Mate. Yes. Control one, is it? No, out here. Oh, I always do that. Control two it is. Okay, so you can see there, we've got a new zone, Link Discover Internal, and I've got an A record pointing at that 124. So that's my VIP of my web services on the front end pool. Okay, so internally now, I can find my front end pool with this record. Okay, I don't have to go out and have Link Discover Internal on the external side. Okay, the clients now know they're internal, they're talking to the front end pool, all good. We've tricked them into thinking where they are, they now know where they should be. Okay, if that makes sense. Does that make sense? So this is a quick and easy way of doing that without, you know, crossing the comms guys. Okay, cool. We've got heaps to do, so we're going to fly through this. Okay, let's go. That's probably the main thing. If I did an NS lookup now, you would see the fabricam.com would come back. So clients will now see that and they'll be happy. Righto, go to reverse proxies, mate. Let's do it.
All right, reverse proxies. Everybody's favorite topic.
Oh, wow.
Well, good pickup. I'll give you one of these. Yeah. All right. All right, there were two fish in a tank. One turned to the other one and said, "You drive, I'll man the guns." Get it? They're in a tank.
Why did he have to remind you? Yeah, that's right.
No prizes for you.
I'm not throwing any stuff. Hey, that's a good call.
All right, so look, I've got this slide up here specifically because TMG is as dead as that joke I just told. So hands up who's got TMG as a reverse proxy at the moment. Well, that's good because you can keep using it. For anybody else who doesn't have it, it's basically no longer available, right? So I've got this slide up here simply just to explain what your reverse proxy needs to be able to do. So Link doesn't actually care what you're going to use as a reverse proxy as long as it can do this. So we need to be able to support the publication of internal websites. So maybe I'll take a step back. So a reverse proxy, for people who might not have the concept solidly in their head, think of a forward proxy. So you're sitting on your corporate LAN and you want to get access to the web. Forward proxy essentially just gets your traffic and routes it to the internet. What we're doing is getting the traffic from the internet and routing it to our internal network. So it needs to be able to publish internal websites with and without encryption. Publish using those fully qualified domain names that I was talking about in the beginning. It's got to be able to handle certificates with subject alternate names, so the stuff that Steve went through, that's very important. If it doesn't support that, then most of your stuff's not going to work. And it must be able to send through the original host header, so we must know what the original URL that was being requested, make sure that travels through to your servers. So if we're requesting meet or dial in, we want to make sure that we get the right response back. And importantly as well, it must be able to do some bridging of ports. So what bridging of ports is, we might get a request through on port 443, and we might want to, or we do need to bridge that to port 4443. So I've got a diagram coming up that I'll explain that in a little bit more detail and exactly why we do that. So keep an eye on the infrastructure qualified for Microsoft Link article. It's got all the supported reverse proxies that we've basically certified. So if you don't want to use TMG or you don't have access to TMG at the moment, then this is where you need to go.
We'll be getting more reverse proxies being tested that'll end up on this site.
Yeah. When will UAG support mobility?
We don't know. So I honestly don't know yet. So I think there's, internally we're trying to see if that if we can do anything be done about that, but we honestly don't know.
Okay.
So at this point, look for other things that can do that.
So, reverse proxy. So I talked about what was published in the reverse proxy a little bit earlier on. Things like Link Discover, the external web farm, FQDN, simple URLs, Office web app. So what we do, we get a request that comes through on port 443, and then the reverse proxy picks it up and translates that to our Link front-end servers on port 443. So the reason that we do that is a couple of things. If you've ever cracked open IIS Manager on your Link front ends, you've got two websites that run. You've got the internal web services and then you've got the external web services. So the external web services runs on port 443 and the internal stuff runs on 443. So this is just basically to separate those. So things that are on the external interface are not necessarily accessible internally, things like the admin console, that sort of stuff. And for additional SIP domains, you can bridge port 80 to port 8080, and that just does some tricky redirection for you. The only thing that we don't want to bridge is the Office web app server traffic. So that's port 443 must stay through to the web app servers on port 443 as well. So what to include in the certificate on your reverse proxy? So just match the DNS names that you've configured, the stuff that you've written in your planning documentation at the start when Steve was talking about planning your URL names. Again, you can be as creative as you want, or you can just use some standard ones. So that includes the simple URLs, the web farm URLs, Office web app. Now, we do say here, wildcard certs are okay for the subject alternative name, but we consider it best practice for you to list all the names on your cert if you can. So usually,
don't want it in the subject name either. So just
keep that in mind if you're going to get a wildcard cert, but you're going to know all the names that are connecting through.
No, not on a reverse proxy cert, and not on Edge actually either. So, no, you don't need those.
So here in the Contoso environment, just again trying to tie it all back in, you can see we've got all the services, the external web services on the front end on 443 and the web app on 443. So you can see the traffic comes through to the load balancers, hits the reverse proxies, and then goes again down into the load balancers to balance the front end traffic. So again, keep in mind that your reverse proxy may also be the same device as your load balancer. So in the case of an F5, for example. So you can save on a bit of infrastructure there. And I think that's all I wanted to cover.
Beautiful. Groovy. So remote access policies. Okay.
Hope you got a good joke lined up, mate.
Yeah. Oh, oh dear. Okay.
How many anticlimax?
I'm going to leave that alone. So how much does it cost for a pirate these days for a wooden leg and a hook?
Tell me.
An arm and a leg. These are all 7-year-old jokes. Okay.
I like that. I like it.
Righto, so Federation, just a couple of quick things about Federation. I'm actually going to squeeze in a few Edge config things if we get there, so we'll fly through this. So Federation, you've got a couple of ways that you can configure Federation, okay? The three ways of doing it, so the first one's direct Federation, and that's where I actually know the other party's edge pool, okay? So if they're fabricam.com and I know that their edge pool is zip.fabricam.com, I can actually configure it that I'm going to allow a particular domain, so fabricam.com, as a federated domain, and I know that their edge pool is zip.fabricam.com, okay? So I can hard code that into my link environment. Okay, that's what we call direct federation. Okay, the problem with that is you get more admin. So you know, if they were to change their edge pool name, we're not going to know that. Things are going to break. Okay, but I don't need to use the SIP Federation TLS records to auto discover that other organisation. Okay, they also don't need to do the same for me. So they might we'll tell them what our access edge service URL is, and they can direct connect to me. So easier from a cert point of view and easier from setting up the service records. Enhanced Federation is where I configure that allowed domain, so fabricam.com, but I don't put in an edge pool for them into the control panel. Okay, I then use the SIP Federation TLS record to find their edge pool. Okay, so Link will know, okay, I haven't put in an edge pool. We'll go and do a SIP Federation TLS service record lookup, find their edge pool, and then connect to them. Okay, so that's the second way of doing it. The third way is called Open Federation. This one's a little bit interesting. Most places don't do this, so Open Federation basically means that if I trust them, they've got a certificate, they've got a SIP Federation TLS record associated with them, I can then connect to them, provided they're using a VeriSign cert for their edge pool, let's say, and then we'll happily connect. Okay, so there's some drawbacks with that. Because we consider that probably something that not everyone's going to need, and there could be potentially activity that's not great, we do actually do some throttling on people that we're connecting to with Open Federation. So if they do some unusual things, like maybe they have somebody who tries to create 1,000 connections with people in your organisation, Link's actually going to go, hang on a tick, that maybe isn't great. We're going to throttle that back. Okay, we do log that. So if this is something that you need to do and you are seeing this, we'll tell you that that's actually happening. So you know, if everybody's got a big email to the greatest sales at Country Road or something like that, they might actually see a lot of Federation traffic happening that sort of stuff. So just be aware of it. So most of the time you don't want to use this unless you have a direct need for that. Yeah.
Can we combine them?
Yes, you can. Absolutely. Yes, you can. And you can also do blocking of domains as well with Open Federation too. So you can actually say allow everything but not these as well. So you can combine. Yes. If you're going to whitelist, do direct.
Okay, that will override the open.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll treat the direct federation domains properly. So the way you put them in there because you want to do proper federation with them. Okay? Absolutely. Righto. So remote access, so what does it mean to actually get up and running? So I just wanted to show you quickly. There we go. We've got 10 minutes. Good. I do want to show you some more Edge config stuff as well. So let's go into our front end pool, fire up control panel. So when you actually create your remote access policy, so you've got your Edge servers up and built and running. Quite often people have that and got it all working, but try and sign in from remote. I can't get in. What's going on? So you need to actually create a policy that allows people in your organisation to use remote access. So if we go to the Federation section, here the external access policy is where we actually configure policies we're going to assign to people in your organisation. Okay, this says, so you might want to let people do Federation or remote access, but maybe not everybody. So maybe the contractors they're not allowed to, but all the full-timers can. So you can have a policy that says, okay, full-timers, they get this access. So we might have this like the Contoso staff policy, which enables Federation and remote access, but not public provider access, so the Skype and that sort of stuff. I then would need to assign that policy. So if I go back here to Supermark, and I have a look inside of Mark's settings, and you'll see here, I need to assign external access which enables him to use remote access, okay? So we assign that at a user level, and he can now sign in remotely. I notice here too, though, in this case, I've actually done probably a bad lab. What we would normally do is have your most restrictive settings at a global level. So what that means is that we typically would have not let people do remote access globally if you were going to do specific, what have we got?
XMPP.
Is enabled, okay, fair enough, oh yes. That off and that off. Okay, so globally people can't federate except for people with that policy assigned. Okay, so you need to
do it as an AD group as well.
You can't do it as an AD group, but you can use PowerShell to go all the members of this group assigned. So you can actually go populate the members, loop through the members of a group. It's pretty not too hard, and then assign that. The problem is keeping track of that as members change. So you're gonna have to keep an eye on. Yeah, you're going to have to do some PowerShell to do that. So that's what I do, is do a little bit of analysis. So who's got it now? Let's go and check what's in the group. So you're going to have to do it both ways. So yes, unfortunately that's probably something we could hopefully improve. Okay, so the next thing you want to do is at an Edge level is actually say to the Edge servers, we're going to allow them to do this. So you have to have this as well. So it's complementary. You've got to work together. I've got to let people use remote access, and I've got to let my Edge servers know that we're going to let them do that. Okay, so we need to configure that. Typically, you're just going to configure this globally. Now, Federation, this is where we actually configure the domains we're allowed. So in this case, I'm using direct Federation, but not with the explicit Edge pool configured. Okay, so I'm going to do a SIP Federation TLS record lookup for this Access Edge FQDN. Okay, if I chose to put in sip.litware.com, then I'm saying that's my Edge pool that I will connect to for the other organisation. So if they don't have a SIP Federation TLS record, this is what I can do. Okay. Now, if you choose to do Open Federation, then this guy here is going to be over. Going to be the one that wins. And then, so for your question before, this is what you would configure to be able to do that. Now, I suppose more and more we're going to get more of the federation with the external PIC providers, but a lot of these are gone now, so we can't use those. So probably not huge to talk about. I just want to quickly jump back to my Edge servers and just talk about a few other things that I skipped through before. Now that we've got a little bit of time. Okay, good. Okay, let's just take you through some fundamentals of Edge. So, which I did promise to do, and I haven't. So, first of all, let's have a look at our Edge as IP addresses. So as you can see, my external interface, three IPs, okay? I've got my three services listening on 181, 182, 183. I have my gateway. Anybody familiar with dual home boxes? What do you put your gateway on a dual home Windows box?
The external.
Yeah, the one with the most destinations, basically, typically is the way it works. So our external interface is going to have our gateway. What does that mean if I've got lots of subnets on the inside? Going to have to find a way. So I'm going to need persistent routes to get back inside. So you need to know about what are the subnets internally that the edge needs to know about and to be able to route back. Remember, your clients, when they're relaying, need to talk to the edges directly. So every subnet that you have a client in that needs to relay, they need to be able to be routed to from this edge box. Okay, so if we do a quick route print, you can see here I've got some persistent routes in here. Now, hopefully, if you've got a Class A or a Class B network for all your internal subnets, you can just add that. If you don't have that luxury, you're going to have a few persistent routes you're going to need to add on this edge box. Okay, so map that to the interface of your internal interface, and then route to the gateway on the internal interface for all those internal subnets. Okay. The other thing to do that's worthwhile, just check your binding order. So typically your public interface should have a binding order that's higher up in your internal interface. Okay. Righto. Now, if you have... Yes?
IPv6.
Yep. What would you like to know? Is it
just the same?
So in 2010, we actually recommended you turning it off. In 2013, you can use IPv6. So you've got a couple of ways to deploy it. We don't recommend IPv6 only. We recommend using both, so V4 and V6 addresses, or go V4 and no V6 if you don't need V6. Okay, so you've got options, you can use it. So we support V6 on our edge servers, that's no problems. With CU1 or 2, so get to the latest service pack, you're all good to go.
So you follow the same process as you do with V4 addressing?
Yeah, you can start with that. If you don't using V6 now, turn it off.
We might just hold questions. We've just got a couple more minutes.
Yes.
We've got a few
we'll
more slides to get
through,
but we'll take them at the end.
Yeah, we'll definitely take them at the end. Okay, righto. So, beautiful.
Might just switch back to the slides and we'll...
All right. Actually, have we got more slides? Oh, yeah, we did. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, management. Yeah, sorry.
Okay, so really quickly on managing your link edge... quick joke.
It's your turn.
Grasshopper walks into a bar. Bartender says, "Oh, we've got a drink named after you." The grasshopper turns around and says, "What? You got a drink named Steve?"
That wasn't too bad.
All right, so managing your link edge. Management considerations. So don't leave your edge servers behind. Just because they're sitting in a gateway, they've got to be patched. It's even more important for you to patch known vulnerabilities on these servers. It's important for you to monitor. Antivirus. Make sure you've got antivirus on your servers. I can't stress that enough. We'll cover certificate maintenance quickly, but things like password management. Make sure you remember the passwords for your edge servers. I don't know how many times.
Seems funny, but I've done.
Make sure you've got them somewhere written down. Yeah. Make sure you've got a configured NTP time source as well, so the link edge servers continue to get correct time.
Just on the password management thing too. If you do have a DMZ-AD environment, we don't ever want our edge servers to be joined to the internal AD domain. It is supported to join to a DMZ-AD domain if that's what you're using for management of your DMZ servers. That is a supported thing to do.
Okay, so monitoring of your edge servers, you can use Ops Manager. I've got some steps there. It's documented in TechNet, but please download the slides, download the video. You can watch this again and re-listen to all those great jokes.
It is a little tricky, so we might actually put a blog together for you after this event to go through monitoring your edge servers.
So the ability now to roll your AV auth cert. Again, we're running out of time, so I'll just cover this quickly, but basically certificates don't last forever. So clients that have got MRAS tokens that have been issued with an old certificate, if that certificate expires while you're sort of signed in, you need to be able, we now have the ability to roll that certificate. So we can say, for all new connections, use this new certificate, but we'll still honor that old certificate as well. While I'm on certificate maintenance as well, I think it was introduced in 2012, the certificate lifecycle notification in the event viewers. If you haven't seen certificate lifecycle notification, this is basically you can monitor for when certificates expire and that sort of stuff. Have an event pop up in your event log saying this certificate's about to expire and then feed that into SCOM. So something else to keep in mind there as well. So look that up, the certificate lifecycle notification. Now, quickly, I just want to show you a couple of cool ways you can validate your edge deployment. If I just flick back to my workstation here. We have the remote connectivity analyzer. So this lets you, once you've deployed Link, you can create a user that you want to test with. So you can come to this website to just test the services. So basically you go in and select, you want to test your Link deployment. So we want to do the remote connectivity tests. We hit next. You pop in the SIP address, the domain username and passwords. So if you're sensitive for sharing this information publicly, just create a test user and then delete it afterwards. So basically you confirm your password, pop it in, and then basically you hit perform test, and it'll go and perform all the tests against your Edge server deployment to make sure that you've got it.
Make sure they've been enabled for remote access too. So assign that policy to remote access to this test user. So kill it at the end.
Yeah, so before you hand it over to your boss and say, sweet, let's go, highly recommend that. Best practice analyzers, and I can't again stress enough to monitor. Don't forget about patching. There's nothing worse than having to explain to somebody that you've been exploited because you failed to patch your servers. You know, these are known vulnerabilities for a reason, so we don't release patches just to keep the devs busy. All right, a few resources for your... Okay, so this is basically what we've covered. Hopefully it's given you a good indication of exactly what it's going to take for you to deploy Edge, the key concepts, IP addressing, hardware load balancing, reverse proxies, all that really good stuff. So again, download the sessions, all the Link sessions that you've seen at TechEd.
We actually do have some good resources.
I think it's...
So we'll fix that up, make sure that's in the deck so you can download it. So we've got some good Edge resources.
So Edge is awesome. So if you don't have it, go out and deploy it. I think you've now got the knowledge at least to start planning and to understand the requirements to at least get you started. Here we go. Here are the resources. So TechNet, the next hot blog is a really good place for all things Link.
That bottom link's really useful too. It's basically like Link Labs online. So you can use them as a, if you've got a passport, you know, Microsoft.net passport account, you can get in there and have a play with 2010, 2013 scenarios. You can both. So we've got, there's an Edge lab, so go through the Edge lab and have a little play. And it's basically RDP into a real world scenario. Well, not real world, but a lab scenario that you can play around with.
All right, our contact information. So if you're federated with Microsoft, or even if you're an external user and you want to connect me on Skype and ping either Steve or I about issues, we can do a similar demo as we did at the start, and we can share logs and that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
stuff
we'd love conferences. To help, so please
so
reach out.
We are support. We do like receiving interesting problems. Every now and then we'll tell you to go through the formal channels if the problem's starting to get too big, but please reach out. We can always help with questions.
Should we do real fast questions just to give these things away? How many services are on the external interface of an Edge?
Three.
Who was that? That was a man in yellow. There you go.
Name one of them.
AV Edge, okay. What port does Federation... 50, you don't want it. Okay. Is it anybody else? So, audio video service? What port? 4-3. Beautiful. And what are the chicken?
Oh, yeah, and this guy down the end who requested the joke.
Come on, grab
so that. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for coming along. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
In the nick
well
of
done,
time.
Mate. We made it.
In the nick of time. Yeah.